In Exodus, and we remember the story, and we had a look at chapter 12 last week, but we know the story just to recap how Israel, the children of Israel, left Egypt, how they wanted to be free. After 430 years of slavery, Moses became their leader. And he went to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go. This is God's directive. This is the instruction from God." And Pharaoh said, "No, we're not letting you go." And so a series of plagues came. The River Nile, for example, turned to blood. And Pharaoh said, "Oh, okay, you can go, but get the water back to..." And then there was then he changed his mind. Once the River Nile went back to its normal water, he said, "No, you stay." And so there was a plague of frogs, a plague of gnats, a plague of flies, all sorts of plagues. And eventually, the final plague worked, and it was the angel of death, the killing, if you like, of the firstborn son, the firstborn of animals as well. And Pharaoh agreed. Then it was the Passover, the killing of the firstborn by the angel of death. And just to recap it, chapter 12, and if I read from verse 29 at midnight, this is Exodus chapter 12, "The Lord struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, the firstborn of Pharaoh, who was the king, to the firstborn of the prisoner in the dungeon, the firstborn of all the animals as well. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night, and there was loud, loud wailing. For there was not a house without someone dead. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, 'Leave my people, go, go, take your flocks and your herds, but go.' And the Egyptians urged them to hurry and leave the country." So they went, they left. And chapter 12, verse 37 tells us there was about 600,000 men. And we assume from that 600,000 women, and if there's 2.4 children, I don't know, about 2 million, that's what most people reckon. There was 2 million people, 2 million, 2 million slaves had suddenly been freed and released, and their livestock, their animals that they'd accumulated as well. It was night time, it was the middle of the night, said at midnight, that's when it happened. Pharaoh said, "Go." It was dark, it was midnight, there was no signpost to tell them which way to go. And because they were slaves, I doubt if they could read anyway as to where they were. Because they were slaves, I guess they'd never been allowed to go anywhere, that they wouldn't know that, we might not have been to London or to Edinburgh, but we vaguely know, yeah, London's that way, Edinburgh's that way, Cardiff's over that way, Plymouth's that, we know more or less where we are, but these are slaves. They've not been anywhere to find out. They didn't know. And the Lord said, "Go." Chapter 13, verse 21. "By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night, in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or by night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people." And that was an unusual signpost, wasn't it? A pillar of cloud or a pillar of fire. When the column of cloud went, they went. And when at night time the pillar of fire went, they went. And when the pillar of cloud stopped, they stopped. And when the pillar of fire at night stopped, they stopped. They were guided. They were guided. And that was excellent, wasn't it, to have such clear, unmistakable guidance by God. There was the sign. And I'll tell you what, if we had if only we had it today. I don't know what your members' meetings are like here, but sometimes there's disagreement, isn't there? Oh, I want it painted magnolia. Is it? Is that a good... We've been painting magnolia. Well, we've been painting magnolia this week. oh no, I think primrose yellow would look. Oh well, no, I think a nice blue would. But if there was a sign in the sky saying magnolia, this is what happened. God gave them a direct. Cliff Richard, there's somebody. People come up to Cliff Richard and so they used to come up and say, "Oh, the Lord's told me that I'm going to marry you." And I think Cliff Richard turned around and said, "Well, he's not told me. Clear off." If only we had that guidance, that clear. And here it was clear. It was a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. It was literally mapped out in front of them. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place from in front of the people. It was there in front of them the whole time. Clear, unmistakable guidance. I suppose when I was coming into church this morning, walking down the hill, suppose a car had stopped and said, "Excuse me, can you tell me the way to Bidit? We're looking for Atlantic Village. Can you tell me the way to go to Atlantic Village?" And I would say, "Well, of course I can. You just carry on up the hill. Listen very carefully. Turn right. And eventually you'll get to a place called Heartland. Okay? And if you park up there, there'll be a helicopter. And it'll take you over to Lundy Island. This is the way to get to Atlantic. You get to Lundy Island, and then there'll be a ferry. We'll bring you back to Ilfracombe. Okay. And then if you catch a bus number, whatever, you can come to first of all to Barnstable. You might have to change, and then it'll take you straight to. Thank you very much. Very helpful. Thank you. And off you. Well, no, I say you go up here, straight over the roundabout, and you're there. And that's what I would say. Listen to God's ways are not always our ways. Listen to chapter 13 and verse 17. Chapter 13 and verse 17. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. God didn't lead them on the shortest way. He took them round the houses, if you like. He didn't. That's there in the Bible, chapter 13, verse 17. When Pharaoh let the people go, God didn't lead them through the Philistine country, over the roundabout, if you like, the shortest way. He said if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. They might turn their. God didn't take them on that direct path, on the main road, or the shorter way, because he said if they go into the Philistine country, it would be like out of the frying pan into the fire. Because they were slaves, but at least they were alive. If they went into Philistine country, they'd be killed. So he sent them to avoid. Who lives at the top of the hill? To avoid the nasty people at the top of the hill. He sent them all the way round to avoid the Philistine country. If they face war, if the going gets tough, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. Dare I say, if the deal doesn't suit them, they might say, "Why have we Brexited? Why have we left Europe? Egypt, sorry. Why have we done this? It was better for us before." And yet, nobody's booed and hissed yet, have they? But there we are. It was better for us. So God led them through this roundabout way, if you like, and eventually passing a few places, which are unpronounceable places, in chapter 14, it says in verse 2, they camped by the sea. They eventually got to the Red Sea. 2 million of them. They'd been let go by Pharaoh. They'd been clearly guided by God. All was well. And then the story continues. As we read that no sooner had they left Egypt, no sooner Pharaoh had said go, that Pharaoh regretted it. Verse 5, what we read in our reading. When the king of Egypt was told the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds and said, what have we done? We've let the Israelites go. We've lost their services. What have we done? Let's go back after them. Let's go and get them. There they are. They're on foot, 2 million of them. All their livestock. Let's get the army ready. Let's get the chariots ready. We'll soon catch up to these 2 million people. So they got their quickest, their best. What does it say in chapter, in that chapter 14, verse 6? He had his chariots made ready and he took his army. He took 600 of the best chariots along with all the other chariots and officers. We got the picture. Here's Israel. They're happy, they're free, they've got a spring in their step, they've been released. In fact, verse 8 of chapter 14 says they were marching out boldly. You know, they were marching to freedom. There they'd settled by the seaside, if you like. All the slavery was behind them. And then our first point this morning, there was a fearful sight. Because as Pharaoh and his army and horses and chariots approached, well, we read it, verse 10. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified. I'll bet they were. Here's these people just freed from slavery, being led by God, and suddenly Pharaoh and his chariots and his army are coming to what they were terrified. The army come in, and I don't know if you've ever been in that. I don't think I've ever told anybody this before, or from a pulpit. I might have one-on-one, but I used to play rugby. It was a rugby school I went to, and I didn't actually play for South Yorkshire Schoolboys, but I got to the final trial. In other words, I was pretty good, though I say so myself. It's the rugby. If you're watching the rugby, this number eight on. I used to play number eight, lock forward. It was at the back of the scrum, and I got to the final trial. I didn't make it into the South Yorkshire Schoolboys team, but the Colts team. But I got to the final trial. Okay, and one day our school, we used to have inter-school sports on a Saturday. And our school, we were playing Don Valley Grammar School in Doncaster. And there'd been a mix-up. And so we were the Colts, the under-15s, the 14-year-olds. But we'd been, there'd been a lash-up, and we were drawn against Don Valley First Team, which is the 18-year-olds. Now, I don't suppose there's much difference physically between a 34-year-old and a 38, or a 24 and a 20, but there's a big difference between a 14 and an 18 year old. And we were drawn against these. Oh, all right, I was pretty good, and the team, that it was the school team, not the Yorkshire team, but you know. But I'll tell you what, when they passed the ball to me and I seen these big lads come into it, I kicked the ball into top. I passed it. I thought, in fact, I think that's the only game I didn't need my rugby shirt washed at all. There wasn't a speck of dust. I just got rid of the blessed thing. It was a fearful. It was time for quick action. When I got the ball, it was time to get rid of it. And Israel had that same. They had to do something. Here was the Egyptian army coming to. They had to do something, and they had to do something quick. Then it was they realized, horror of horrors, they'd camped in a valley. On the left was a cliff, on the right was a cliff, in front was the sea, and the Egyptian army were behind them. They were well and truly snookered. They couldn't move. And well, chapter 14 verse 3 says they were hemmed in. They were hemmed in. It's there in the Bible, verse 3. They were hemmed in. There was no way out. There was no one to pass the ball to. It was indeed a fearful sight. Secondly, there was a miraculous sight. a wonderful sight, because, you see, leading up to the miracle of the sea dividing, they, verse 10, they cried out to God. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified, and they cried out to the Lord. They started praying. I'll bet they did. And in their prayer, they also had a go at their leader. Verse 11 and 12, they said, "Oh, Moses, what are you doing? We said we didn't want to leave this. We should have stayed. We could have died in there, in Egypt, rather than die in the desert, be killed like this. What are you playing at?" But Moses said, verse 13, he said, "Wait and watch." Verse 13, Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm. Just stand firm. And you will see, just watch, the deliverance the Lord will bring upon us today. Stand firm and watch. Trust." And what happened? Well, I paused as we did the reading. You remember we said about the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. Always in front. Always in front. But now, chapter 14 tells us, the cloudy pillar moved from the front to the back. Verses 19 and 20. The angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the Egyptian side and light to the Israeli side. So they didn't go near each other. Sorry, I should have turned that off. I thought it was my pacemaker then for a minute. There we are. That's the first time that's ever happened, isn't it, really? There we are. But you've got the idea, haven't you? There was the cloud. Maybe it's someone saying, "Come on, get on with it, man." It was dark. They didn't come near each other at all. And the sea divided. Moses stretched out, a wonderful sight. Verse 16, God told Moses to stretch out his hand over the sea and divide it. And verse 21 tells us, Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters divided, and the Israelites went through on dry ground with a wall of water on both their right and on their... They got across in daylight. Egypt couldn't see because it was the pillar of fire. It was dark. They couldn't see. But as it got lighter, they followed. And verse 23 tells us, the Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, they followed them into the sea. They followed them into the sea with their chariots. And I imagine it was a bit like Glastonbury, you know, with all the mud and everything there, and the chariots were going through, and the wheels got stuck. And we read verse 23, verse 24, during the last watch of the night, as it began to dawn, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptians and threw it into confusion. He made the wheels of their chariots come off, so they had difficulty driving. Well, I'll bet they did if they didn't have any wheels on their chariots. And the Egyptians said, "Let's go back. Let's get away from these Israelites," because God is obviously fighting for them. And then it was, verse 26, the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand again, Moses, so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and the chariots and the horsemen." And the verse continues that it's dawn now and the waters came back. And verse 28 says, everything is drowned dead. What a sight that. There was a fearful sight initially. Is the Egyptians coming? But then there was a miraculous sight, because the waters divided. They got across. And the final thing we say very quickly was, there was a victorious sight as well. Victorious because verse 30 tells us, on the shore were washed up all the dead bodies of the Egyptians. There was a victory. Might be gruesome to think there's all the dead bodies, but it was a victory, that's the point. It was a, remember what God had said in verse, what Moses had said in verse 13, don't be afraid, just stand firm, and you'll see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you'll never see again alive. just wait and watch. Trust God, and you will see his salvation. No wonder Moses in that chapter 15, when he writes his song about it, he leads them into a great song of praise. He said, I will sing to the Lord, chapter 15, verse 1. The horse and the rider he's thrown into the sea, the Lord has now become my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. Has he become your strength and your song? When things go deep, when we're bereft, when we're hospitalized, when we get bad news, when things, is the Lord our strength? Well, that's the point of this story. The Lord is our strength and our song. He puts a song in our, and he has become our salvation. The Lord who leads his people in power. I'm just going to finish by reading a psalm. It's not going to be the longest psalm or the shortest psalm or the middle psalm, but Psalm 106. Psalm 106 and just the first dozen verses or so. Praise the Lord, it says, Psalm 106. Praise the Lord. Give thanks to the Lord. He's good. His love endures forever, forever. Who can proclaim the mighty acts of the Lord or fully declare his praise? Blessed are they who maintain justice, who constantly do what is right. Remember me, O Lord, when you show favor to your people. Come to my aid when you save them, that I may enjoy the prosperity of your chosen ones, that I may share in the joy of your nation and join your inheritance in giving praise. Listen to this. We have sinned. Even as our fathers did, we have done wrong. We've acted wickedly. When our fathers were in Egypt, they gave no thought to your miracles. They didn't remember your many kindnesses, and they rebelled by the sea, the Red Sea. Yet he saved them for his name's sake, to make his mighty power known. He rebuked the Red Sea. He dried it up. He led them through the depths as though it was a desert, just dry ground. He saved them from the hand of the foe. From the hand of the enemy he redeemed them. The waters covered their adversaries. Not one of them survived. Then they believed his promises and sang his praise. Amen. We're going to leave it there and we're going to sing his praise in the words of our final hymn. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, thou great Redeemer, pilgrim, through this barren land. It's number 201. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim, through this barren land. I am weak, but thou art mighty. Hold me with thy powerful hand. Bread of heaven, feed me now and evermore.